Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever considered being a squirrel?
It's bizarre.
Hello and welcome to Bizarro UK. We're back for episode 10 and it's been a while. So it's been a couple of weeks since I last did a show, but it's good to be back. And we're going to do an interview with Christopher Boyle in a minute. I just want to say a massive thank you to Chris Kelso and the Spectrum Book in Glasgow last weekend, just gone. It was a great event, and for the 75 to 100 people who turned up and pretended to laugh at my reading, thank you very much. It was a lot of fun. So to Chris Kelso and to the Speculative Bookshop, thank you very much. And so we're here today with Mr. Christopher Boyle, author of The Fairy Princess of Trains. Are you there, Christopher?
Hi there, Adam. How are you doing today?
I'm good, mate. You're having better weather than us, I believe.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on the show, Adam.
Ah, it's my pleasure, mate. It's my pleasure. It's always good to meet and chat to new authors, and especially ones from across the pond, which is great because obviously Bizarro is not such a huge thing in the UK yet, but we're trying to change that around. Three of us. All three of us. So, tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a typical California type individual. I grew up in SoCal my entire life. I run around doing in school and work. I work for a charity in the day, and by night I write books. The Fairy Princess of Trains is the first thing that I've had published. Beyond that, I do the Bizarro Cast, which is like a fiction podcast. We do short stories, and then that's me for the most part. I'm working on something else right now too, so that's always great.
How did you first get into the role? When did you actually sit down and think, you know what, I can actually write this shit, I'm gonna do it, and then start putting your fingers to the keyboard? Or pen to paper.
Yeah.
You can't just assume these days, because I know quite a few authors are actually reverting back to the old long-gun version.
Well, you'll see some dudes sometimes around here at the Starbucks, and they'll have like a typewriter, and they'll be typing away.
Typewriter.
No, I swear, they'll have like the mustaches and like a scarf and a hat and like a full, like a Sherlock Holmes pipe, and it'll be like 80 degrees out, and they're sweating, and they're typing away on the typewriter with a
coffee. Those fucking guys.
Yeah, no, they're everywhere around here. But I mean, I guess that sort of thing, like, or even writing on paper is great because it makes you go, like, it sort of forces you to revise, right? Because when you're transferring it from paper to like your word processor or whatever, it really forces you to go line by line and not be lazy and skim through and look for errors and that sort of thing. So, I mean, there's definitely a value to that, but I first really decided, like, oh yeah, I could maybe be a writer when I was 16, and I didn't really understand the concept of making money, so that really explains why I dove headlong into that one.
And now that you're a writer, you still don't understand.
No, no, I'm starting to get the hang of it.
Yeah, it's a long process. We're in it for the long haul. I mean, you said when you were 16. I mean, you're still pretty young now. I mean,
yeah, I'm about 20-25 right now. So
about 20-25.
Somewhere in there.
In there, ballpark. Yeah. So I mean, that's pretty young. You know, to be started. I mean, most people start writing at 52 when they're. That's actually a fact. Most people think about writing their first book at 52. So you've got quite a big head start, which is great. So you chose to write some bizarro, which is you know, a specialist genre. Why did you opt for bizarro over, say, I don't know, Regency romance or?
Well, that's a good point. I've actually, and don't tell anyone this, but I've actually been thinking about going and writing a bunch of really, really bad romance novels under, like a pen name or something, because I see dudes who, like, self-publish and do that on Amazon, blow overhead, and they're just pumping out, like 50 terrible novels a year, and, you know, they're not even, like, long novellas, and they're making a bunch of money, so, you know, like, the guy who writes those, like, I Had Sex with a Dinosaur, Raptor Boss Made Me Gay, or whatever.
Do you know how much they make? They do about 30,000 sales a month or something, and it's just, I fucked a Velociraptor, and I saw one on my timeline today, and it was, Rolling with the Bear or something, and it was a teddy bear porn. Not teddy bear porn, but grizzly bear porn. And it's like, but these people are making shitloads of money out of it, and here we are trying to write, you know, serious literary shit and getting nowhere. So,
No, I think it's great. No, I like, I got into bizarro. I originally wanted to write horror, and I don't know. Horror is just such... There's great horror being written right now, don't get me wrong, but in many ways it's a very, very well-established and fleshed-out genre. And while I was doing some horror conventions, specifically KillerCon in Las Vegas, I think it was back in 2011 when I first met some of the bizarro crowd. I met like Jeff Burke and some of those guys, and they were out at that convention sort of letting people know, hey, we're here, we exist.
Yeah,
and it just seemed like a really cool thing because it has so much room to grow and so much room to expand, and there's just something about it that's really, like, unbridled fun. You know, there's not a whole, I mean, there's corners of it where there's pretension, and I try to shy away from that, but a lot of it is, like, I don't know, I always, when people ask me, people who have never read Bizarro ask me, like, what it's about, I always comp it to, like, cheesy 80s B movies, like Big Trouble in Little China. Like, a movie that doesn't take itself too seriously, that has a lot of fun. Like, those John Carpenter movies back in the 80s. That's what I really try to shoot for when I write and when I, like, put together programming and stuff. And, like, fuck, man, there's a lot of cool stories to be written.
Yeah. And like you say, I mean, there's something quite cinematic about Bizarro that, you know, you wouldn't really get with any other genre. I mean, a lot of the stuff you read, even though it's completely fucking out of this world, you know, it would translate well. I mean, if you look at stuff like John Dies at the End, say, it would translate quite well to a film because it's so, you know, strange and visceral and weird and all these other things. So, like you say, it's like the cult section of the film world.
Yeah, that's the one that gets thrown around a lot. I forget who. I think it was Rose who originally said that, Rose O'Keefe. But I mean, There's a lot of good bizarro books that would make really, really awesome movies. Most of Carl Malick's stuff, Garrett Cook's stuff definitely too. If you've read like Time Pimp, that one would do really well as a film. What else would do real well? What is the name of the one that M.T. Johnson did with the pig? Pork Knuckles Malone. That would be a pretty good B2. Most of them, you're absolutely right. They would translate real, real well if someone like went out there and was like, yeah, let's make like a movie company that does almost like Troma, but just like does pure adaptations of the Zorro books. That's a cool thing. I'm surprised no one's done that.
I am surprised. That's actually a really cool idea. I mean, we need to, you know, maybe get somebody together, get some people together and try and figure something out. Because these, like you say, these films would be awesome.
Give away my business plan.
I'm not going to leap all over it, but I don't mind sort of being the UK arm of Bizarro Productions or whatever. That would be interesting. But back to writing. What's your process like? I mean, do you sit down and just write, or do you plan? Do you outline? Do you have character names ready? Do you, you know, how does it work for you?
That's a solid question. I'm not one of those dudes who can like bust it out over a weekend. My attention span varies, so I gotta like, you know, sit down every day and be like, okay, I'm gonna pound out between like 1,000-2,000 words or whatever. I'll try to outline as much as I can, but I leave a lot of room because a lot of times, like, I'll write myself into a corner and then I'll think, like, okay, like that.
But we're back. I'm going to keep this other laptop live as well, just in case. We have the same problem. And sorry about that, Christopher.
No worries.
I think you deserve a... sorry. I apologize to anybody listening. I did try and play a song, but it just didn't work. Is there any one subject that you could never write about an author? I mean, we've all got our taboos, we've all got our things that would piss off in real life, but do you think anything is beyond putting down on paper?
I mean, for me, there are things I wouldn't personally write about, but I mean, this, I don't know, I have, like, very strong feelings about this, like, from, like, I don't know, this weird, like, I always describe, like, kind of like an American standpoint, right? Like, for me, I don't think anything should be beyond writing about, even especially in a highly critical way. In fact, for me, the more sacred or the more special or the more upheld something is, the more directly it needs to be criticized or written about, because the dangers within it. So I really encourage direct criticism. But for me, like, a lot of people attack religion really directly within works of Bizarro. They parody it really directly. That's not necessarily something that's for me. Like, I was raised Catholic, and I see, like, I value that a lot. Like, I definitely think that religion needs to be parodied fiercely and viciously, because it's the sort of thing that can lead to a lot of bad politics, I think, need to be come at, like, vehemently. But that's not necessarily something that I want to do with my writing. For me, I'm, like, really about having fun. So the one thing that I wouldn't write about mainly, boring stuff. I think there's enough serious heavy material in the world, and I don't want to contribute to any more of it necessarily. I want to write things that are just purely really kick-ass fun to read. So that's like where I come at from that.
I mean, there are authors out there who take a very, you know, even in Bizarro as well. I mean, there are things that are pushed and boundaries that are pushed. And like you say, I mean...
Yeah, and that's a good thing, though. I think it should be encouraged. Like, that's one of the kick-ass things about Bizarro. Really, writing and creativity in general, like, is pushing boundaries and questioning things and, like, you know, finding new stuff that people enjoy, too.
I agree. you're an editor for the hugely successful BizarroCast. Do you want to tell everybody who's listening about BizarroCast?
Well, I mean, it's basically it's a podcast for bizarro fiction. Like, you could download it off of iTunes. It's really more just like fiction stories. Like, you could tune in and like stories are narrated. And it was fashioned after a lot of podcasts that came before it, like the Escape Artist podcast, Drabblecast, Escape Pod, Pseudopod, Drabblecast is not part of there. They have Pseudopod, Escape Pod, and Podcast. That's right. But Drabblecast too, that's another great one. Basically, there's a lot that came before this. And when I was working, I was doing manufacturing for a while. I was working like a drill press, and I would just like listen to podcasts all day, listen to like stories. It's a lot of fun. It's like reading, but you know, I could do other things while I do it. And there wasn't anyone that was just really dedicated to Bizarro at the time. And it's like, oh, there's a lot of cool stories that would work great in audio. So I just started it up, and it's typically just me. Sometimes I'll get people to help out on the project, but it's typically like mainly a one man show. So I can't have the output that I would like. It's, you know, it's two stories a month typically. I've had a couple hiatuses here and there. We're about to start up again. But the idea is to put a lot of really cool content out there. So when people are driving or when people are stuck at work, when they have time to listen, or when you're folding laundry or whatever, you can hear some cool bizarro stories and you can be entertained.
Yeah, I mean, there is something. I mean, it's an old-fashioned way of doing things. I mean, with the old radio plays as well. I mean, there is something quite nice about listening to a complete stranger read your bedtime story.
Yeah.
I quite like audiobooks, and I listen to my own, well, obviously, because I have to approve them when I get an audiobook. And it's quite it's different when you're listening to your own work back. It's like, shit, did I write that? Did this narrator just throw in a line? But you don't actually know until you hear somebody else say the word. You know what I mean? It's quite a nice way to listen to your work. Or, I mean, maybe I'll get somebody on to read something one day. I don't sort of have the voice for narration. I have a very thick Wolverhampton accent, so it doesn't really translate well to radio.
Oh no, what are you talking about? You gotta listen to Pseudopod. They love UK narrators. They love him over at Pseudopod. The host, he's Manx, and he's got a very healthy accent. And it's great. I love the UK accent. It's very soothing.
Which one? There are about collectively. On the whole.
Collectively, maybe. Maybe shying away from the Cockney, but it's a very soothing tongue.
Wow. Well, I live 12 miles away from Birmingham, which was voted the most depressing accent, I think, in the world. And this is after like there are Ethiopians and that out there that actually sound more excitable than we do. You know what I mean?
Oh my god.
Yeah, with the most depressing accent and the most horrible accent to listen to in the world. Not that I have a Birmingham accent, they're 12 miles up the road, but, you know, when people hear me talk, it's like, are you a Brummie? And it's like, never say that to somebody from Wolverhampton. So, yeah, accents. The American accents are fantastic for narration, I think. I don't think, especially Southern accents, I think there's something really cool about a Southern accent.
You love that twang?
Yeah, I like the twang. It's like, it's just awesome. Yeah, I think
it is.
I could listen to that. It's just the really, just a nice drawl to it, and it's smooth. It's like, it reminds me of whiskey.
They got great words for things too. I got a bunch of family that I never see down in Arkansas, and I got a some grandfather or something like that died down there, and I had an uncle that was talking to me on the phone. He's like, Chris, you got to come down here. You got a lot of kin folk down here. And like the way he says it, like no one in Southern California says kin folk. That's like such an awesome turn of phrase.
That's fantastic. If you say that in England, they would section you. They would put you in an asylum and say, Yeah, he's the guy who said kinfolk. <It's> like, let's throw shit at him. Yeah, you can't say kinfolk. Very, like you say, a very mystical sort of people. Did I
they say they still have dragons over there, they just keep them under wraps?
They do, they have dragons in Ireland, and there's still a few knocking around Wales, but hardly any now in England, so... It's moving on. The world's moving on. Finally, we're catching up. We're finally slaying all our dragons.
Oh man, we'll leave a couple for us American tourists.
We will. Well, if we send them to you, you're just getting Matthew McConaughey to fucking kill them all.
I know. We have a bad track record with that fucking dragon heart.
Yeah.
Ring of Fire, whatever. Yeah, we're bad. We're terrible with dragons. No, I haven't seen any dragons in Bizarro stories. Have you?
No. That's something no. That isn't really. Maybe it's not weird enough. You have like
no weird.
Flying pigs.
I'm gonna make an effort. Well, the one I'm writing this one right now that's got a zombie horde of Count Draculas. So I don't know how I put a dragon in there, but I think I'm gonna throw. Now, just because of this conversation.
Well, it's bizarre. You can throw it. Just you know, have a chapter.
Yeah, exactly.
Have a chapter. Is there anything that really, really pisses you off? In the world or in general, or on social media? I know it's a loaded question, but what pisses you off?
I don't know. People just whining and bitching and hating. I mean, there's a lot of people who spend a lot of time being super highly critical. It just stuff in the long run is fucking nonsense. And I think if people put that much effort into making the world around them a cooler place, then it really would. And then you got half these people who will whine and complain on social media and be utterly apathetic in their lives. I used to go door to door. Fundraising for a charity, and you know, you get people who will rant and rave about the craziest nonsense, and then when it comes to like put down money for little girls in countries to like be prevented from being into sexual trafficking and getting to go to school, it's like, nah, I don't really got $5 a month or whatever. I don't really give a shit. And I don't know it's this what kills me is armchair criticisms of just inane bullshit coupled with real-world apathy.
That is a well-put sentence. I like that.
I mean, I know that's a very ephemeral thing. It's like, okay, well, how are we going to change basic human nature? People want to feel like something, and, you know, when it comes to doing things, it's easier to say something than to do something.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I don't know.
It's an easy thing to complain about. Here I am complaining from my armchair about it, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, you change it, but it does seem to be getting worse. I mean, with the advent of, you know, social media as well, I mean, it's like everything's so easy to just hate and, you know, to put your opinion out there and how much you hate something. It's, and nobody gives a shit. Nobody gives
well,
a shit.
Well, you know what?
I don't give
Vince,
a shit.
Vince Kramer sometimes. Vince Kramer, the guy who wrote, Gigantic Death Worms
Junior write the audio
Gigantic
book.
Death Machines of Death or whatever. I'll sometimes see him commenting when people get into that, like people who are friends, like he'll even say, like, fuck, why do we have to make someone feel bad for liking something just because we don't like it ourselves?
Yeah.
Like, just fuck off. Go like something. Go enjoy something. Go make the world a better place by doing that. And we forget, like, on one hand, I would love to say, like, oh, it hasn't gotten worse. It's just with social media, it's more in our face. But in reality, I mean, fuck, the things we do in our lives have effects that echo downstream hugely. When they burned down the library at Alexandria, it set back fucking 500 years. Being a Debbie Downer can be a bad thing. Those people were big Debbie Downers, and they set back civilization 500 years. Don't be a fucking hater for no reason.
Yeah. Fantastic. which brings me to my next question. Do you ever read your own reviews? I mean, I stopped doing this a couple of years back. because in the long grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter what somebody else thinks. Do you read your own reviews? And how do you cope with the negative ones?
I'm pretty fresh out the gate still. I've only written the one book so far. I imagine when I'm on like my third or fourth or something, I won't really care as much, but I check them out. I got one the other day that wasn't the best, but I mean, you know what? It's like they paid to read the book. They're allowed to have an opinion. I mean, who cares if they shout about it? Fuck, they paid the toll. Let them say whatever they want. I mean, such is bad publicity, but you know what? Like, I understand why some authors, they'll even do social media control and they'll pay Amazon to take bad reviews and make a stink about it.
Yeah.
And I think it was Anne Rice that was making a big complaint about readers giving bad reviews. And her, I've never met her, but her kid, Christopher, is a really great guy. But I mean, for me, it's like you paid the toll, you rode the ride, you're allowed to speak your mind.
Yeah. I pretty much agree with that. You see it all the time. An army, getting an army together to sort of go and get a review taken down. And it's like, do you know what? Like you say, I've got the royalty, you've got an opinion, you know, sorry you didn't like it, move on.
Yeah, and I mean, their money's already in your pocket. I mean, you know, they paid you. Fuck, you know, what are you going to be harshing on them for? Like, they're allowed to say, I talk about things that I don't like sometimes, and I know, you know, this is going back, but I didn't like Avatar, the movie that they did with the blue people, and lots of people like it, and they're allowed to like it, but I thought that was a fucking terrible movie, and I'm not afraid to say it. I paid to see it. I'm allowed to have my fucking opinion.
Damn right.
James Cameron's still rich. He doesn't give a shit what I think.
Yeah. I spoke to him the other day. He said, I don't give a fuck.
Fuck.
He's going to make three more just to fuck you over.
Yeah. Exactly. He's still making those fucking... He didn't listen.
He didn't care.
He won an Oscar for that shit or something. So, I mean, you know, he's what... So, I mean, that's what I care about reviews. I hated Avatar and they're still making them so fucking...
some of the best books that you've read recent years that other people should pick up.
Well, really recently, I think the last book I put down might have been Johnny Gruesome by Greg Lamson. That was all right. I mean, it was a high cut. It was B movie, but it was a lot of fun. It's like this kid comes back from the dead and starts killing people. I read Hungry Bug. That one was pretty good. I liked that one. That was Carlton Mellick. It was fun. It had like sort of a Neil Gaiman-ish feel. One of the books that I've read really... Oh yeah, this I read a while back, but I never hear people talk about it, and it's a really amazing book. It's gigantic, though. It's called Carry and Comfort. I forget the name of the dude who wrote it. I lent it to my mom. She never gave it back to me, but it's this really cool book about like mind control Nazis. It's not bizarre, and it's a lot more serious than it sounds. It's mind control Nazis running around like that cool movie on Netflix with the Nazis on the moon or whatever. It's like subtle or whatever, but really, really fucking cool book. What else have I read recently that's fun? I read something about Mafia, but that one wasn't really that great, so I'm not going to recommend it. Time Pimp, I read that not too long ago. There's a lot of good books in the world. I mean, there's too many like books to have read all the even ones. That's the problem with it.
You're never going to come. There's just too much. That's a sad thing. It's like, if you're like me, I mean, it's like, you know that no matter, you know, you live to whatever age, you are just never going to even scratch the surface of all this great stuff, and it's such a sad thing. It's like, oh, I don't want to die.
I was just saying the other day, I wish I had like a solid, I don't know, 5,000 year lifespan. I could spend the first like 200-300 years just like reading and learning things. There's just so much ridiculous cool stuff out there.
Who would you say your favourite authors are, then? Without, you know, sounding like you're coming on to them. I always ask this question.
Well, I like, I mean, some of them are fairly big. Like I said, I'm a big fan of King. I mean, he can't write endings that well, but he can really do solid world building. I like Neil Gaiman because of the background feel of his story. They have this real, like, almost magical realism that I really enjoy. I like Carlton Malick a lot. He has that similar vibe. It's for people who have written like a tiny bit less, I would say. Oh, well, I like writing too. I definitely want to say that. I really like a lot of grit. I'm a huge fan of like Ian Fleming stuff.
Yeah.
I love some of the like Vin File stuff is okay. Garrett Cook has a similar vibe. A lot of his writing that I really, really like. Who else is there? I like Chuck Palahniuk and that sort of stuff, that sort of like transgressive vibe. I dig that. Who was that drunk that everyone loves? I like him too. What's the name? Bukowski.
Yeah.
I like his shit too. He's pretty enjoyable.
Everyone loves a drunk.
there's a lot. It's hard to keep a real solid eye on there's some really, really fantastic people who have written one or two things that I haven't, like Orson Scott Card. I've read Ender's Game and I loved it. And I can't say I've read another single. I've probably heard some of his short stories on this podcast, but I haven't really read that much of his fucking stuff. So, I mean, a lot of it is like really good books that are standalones for me, unfortunately. But when I have an author, sometimes I'll like eat up a bunch of their stuff. You know who was actually good? I only read one of his books, but the guy who wrote Rambo. I haven't read Rambo, but it was this book about like people who are like urban explorers or some shit.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
David Morrell.
Yeah, he's actually a good writer. That dude's
a
really good writer.
Yeah, I haven't read Rambo either. I mean, I think it's the fact that you've seen the film 1,000 times, but you should really read the book. It's like. But I've never really got around to it. I didn't even know it was a book when I was growing up. Apparently found out it was a book a few years ago. I don't,
First Blood.
You know what I mean? It pops up on the screen before the film. It never really caught on. But.
Well, and then who would think too, like this guy, the other book, it's like totally not like Rambo at all. It's so off. Well, you would think he'd be like Tom Clancy. Like Tom Clancy writes Tom Clancy, and dude, he like wrote Rambo, and then he writes a book about urban explorers. Like I can dig.
That's a sign of a good writer, right there. You can do that kind of action, like the child kind of action, and then move on to something completely different. I mean, there are authors out there who just limit themselves to pretty much the same. I mean, there are authors out there that use the same fucking story over and over again, but I mean, there's no names, but
Yeah.
I mean, there's only so many times you can fucking write about Bigfoot, or move on. There's other shit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's good marketing for a minute, but you have to be able to transition well, like fucking. David Bowie was only, Ziggy Stardust for so long, and then he stopped being Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah. And if he was still Ziggy Stardust now, he would be as successful.
Yeah, wait, he'd be like fucking joke almost.
Yeah. Yeah. What would be the title of your autobiography? I know you're only young. Well, at the moment, it'd probably be 5 and still kicking, wouldn't it? But
assuming that I, let's say I was diagnosed with some sort of terminal illness and I was to write a quick autobiography to sum it all up, it would be, it would be just fuck !! Black cover, white lettering, and it would be like bubble lettering too. It would be beautiful.
That sounds, yeah. I think the bubble lettering did it for me. The embossed feel of it would be, yeah, that'd do it for me.
And the letters would be raised, like some of the old school, like the Leisure book covers, it would be like that lettering.
Yeah, I mean, there's not enough of that now. It's you know, that was a thing back then in the 80s, and only the top big authors really use it now. I mean, the old, but yeah, like you say, the leisure books and the old row, and they were always, you know, quite a nice rate.
Probably has something to do with the whole print on demand thing, I imagine.
Yeah, it's too expensive.
I'll try to negotiate that in my next contract.
Yeah,
raised lettering, and it's a deal breaker.
This is it. I've never had a book released with raised lettering, and now that you've mentioned it, and you know, I'm sitting here thinking about it, and I fucking want that.
As writers, we have to start demanding it, or we're never going to get it. We have to unionize over this issue right here.
Yeah.
Not entitlements, not like healthcare, any of that bullshit. We want our raised lettering, motherfuckers.
Yeah. If it's good enough for Guy and Smith, it's good enough for fucking me. Tell ya.
Exactly.
That dude's still going, isn't he? Guy and Smith. I do like him. So what's next then? I mean, you said you were working on sort of sci-fi thing.
No. It's like, it's cool. Basically, it was sort of sci-fi. It's Radioactive Draculas, right? My idea is, like, it's almost like I got inspired by, like, the whole Andy Warhol thing with, like, the prints, and he makes a bunch of them, and they kind of lose value or whatever. They lose certain qualities when he remakes them, and they become, like, a hoard, like he did with the Marilyn prints or whatever. That's where I got the idea. So it's, like, Dracula gets irradiated, and he starts turning, like, almost like zombies, but they're Draculas, right? He bites a person, and instead of becoming like a regular vampire version of themselves, they become like a fucking, they become a Dracula. Just like Bela Lugosi, they grow a widow's peak and a cape and a whole shebang, and they're running around, and they can only say like cheesy Dracula shit, like, you know, the children of the night, what music they make, and they talk with the whole accent, and it's really over the top. And they're like, they're dumb, right? They're not very smart. They're basically like zombies, but they're Draculas. And, like, I have a bunch of cool, like, I'm maybe a little less than a quarter of the way through right now, but I have it all outlined out. Like, I know, I don't want to, like, give the whole plot away, but I know exactly, like, how it's going to go till the end for the most part, barring any, like, cool ideas I throw in. But, like, I have some neat ideas for the world, like, how it's kind of restructured to deal with the Dracula apocalypse. Because it's set after the fact, right? It's not, like, set at day zero. Dracula's already everywhere. We're trying to live with it, and essentially there's a chance to cure all the Draculas. So, like, we have some people running around doing that. There's Draculas chasing him, and, like, Count Dracula himself in the mix. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to have a lot of, like, the high-speed, really action-orientated vibes in the Fairy Princess of Trains. I'm aiming for a little bit longer of a work, but it's going to be a lot of fun overall.
That sounds awesome. Sounds really good. Were you a big fan of the Universal films?
The like the old school monster ones. I've seen a lot of them. Some of them are good. Some of them aren't. I really liked Frankenstein a lot. Mummy, I didn't like as much because it really just reminded me. The Mummy, like, it was essentially the same movie as Dracula, but with a mummy instead of a Dracula.
Yeah.
Like, it's that kind of bummed me out. But I like them a lot. The big idea for this, it's almost like a zombie story, but it's really, really not. But just it's about, and I really hate for it, it's not heavily, but a lot of it's sort of like reflexive on culture, and just like we're really obsessed with this idea of repetitive memes.
Yeah.
And you know, we're really I don't know, it's gonna be a lot of fun, let's just put it that way. But yeah, I really love the original monster movies, and I love the way that they've had such a profound influence on the way we look at monsters since then.
Yeah.
They're really like a peg in the sand in that way.
Well, does that have a home to go to when it's fish?
Right now, I'm not sure. I've had talks with the people at BPP, at Bizarre Occult Press, and it might go over there. But it's going to be a little bit longer, so I'm not sure where they're going to be looking at. If not, I mean, the great thing about the Bizarro industry right now is there's so many amazing publishing houses available to work with.
Yeah, and they're all sort of... There's something nice about it. It's a very close-knit sort of community, and it's nice to work with all of them at some point. There's not one Bizarro press or editor that I wouldn't like to work with at some point.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, cool. What's great about it too is that there's so much talent flowing around. There's so many young, talented people too. Like, you look at like Chris Kelso, who's a young guy. You look at Grant Womack, he's a young guy. You look at like Garrett Cook, still fair. Like, actually, everyone involved is still. I mean, you have some dudes who have been around for a while, but the whole talent pool is fairly young, and everyone is just really, really brimming with like creative juice. So I see an awesome future.
Yeah, can't wait. So finish up. How can people get in touch with you? Website, social media.
I'm on Twitter at Hey Chris Boyle. I'm also on Instagram at Hey Chris Boyle. You can check out the Bizarro Cast at bizarrocast.blogspot.com or search for us on iTunes or Stitcher, or probably any other podcast hosting. I myself am also available on Facebook. If you want to check me out, I'm Facebook at Christopher.Boyle, I think. You can just search me. I'll be around.
Awesome.
I think that's about it for my social medias.
Fantastic. It's been an absolute just chat with you, mate. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you as well. Thanks for having me on.
And I apologize for the problem that we had in the middle section, but we got there in the end.
No worries.
Yeah, so if you stick around, and I'll have a quick chat with you and I'll finish the show.
Okay.
I'm not like you, I just fuck up. Come on, motherfucker, everybody has to.